Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Welcome back. You're with Greenwashed, and I think I still have Don here. Boy, Don, do you think you need a break or something after that one?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I'm a bit animated when I get into this stuff. But you know, it's wearisome. It's wearing New Zealand down. It's causing massive division slowly. And of course, we've got the division about to be continued with the tension between the Waitangi Tribunal and David Seymour's Treaty Principles Bill. I mean, Friday, just gone, Waitangi Tribunal put out a 200-page document trying to stir up the troops, I suppose you'd say. And, you know, I think David Seymour is, yeah, he's got a lot of work to do to keep this on track. And he's not getting the support of the National Party, which is a massive problem in this coalition.
You know, Don, that gives me the perfect lead into the climate crazy this morning. You know what both you and Jason Herrick, because I've been listening to you gentlemen, I barely got a word inside was between two first residents. But what you both need is you need to take a leaf, or at least our industry, farming industry bodies need to take a leaf out of UK. Farming UK reported this, free training for farmers to help boost diversity and inclusivity. So I can think of no two better specimens than you and Jason, who could do with some of this. The Institute for Agriculture and Horticulture, TIAH, an online development program, has launched a new segment to help promote the value of diverse teams in UK farming industry. This will help farmers recognize unconscious biases. Each module will take just about 40 minutes to complete, and you will discover how a person thinks can depend on their life experiences, and sometimes their beliefs may not be right or reasonable. You reckon you need some of that, Don?
Well, look, and I don't think any New Zealand farmer needs any of it either. There's massive diversity, inclusivity around New Zealand, if you look at it.
And I mean, look at me, specimen number one, workforce in the rural ag space. Never had an issue for this, but that's what they'd like us to think, that we are all not being inclusive and that we are all racist.
Oh, we need a handheld as well, and we need someone to put out modules that you'll learn online, and it's going to make all the difference. Actually, what does make the difference is actually being respectful of everyone and getting the right people for the right job. You look at the New Zealand farming landscape. There is massive diversity of ethnicities, let alone gender. I mean, there's a lot of women in New Zealand agriculture doing the hard yards, owning farms. There's a lot of South Americans, a lot of Philippine workers. There's massive change, massive change in my lifetime, and no one in New Zealand has resisted it. They've assimilated into the farming network just fine.
It is funny that this should come from the UK, Don. And, you know, people might be thinking why we've had this in the climate crazy, but it is farming related. It is the whole greenwashing related. Look at how well it's worked out for the UK with their riots in recent times. And I like how the Farming UK page, when they put this post up, is being slammed by people in the comments. Our farmers are best in the world. Leave them alone. The far-left ideology, good luck with that. Diversity and inclusivity, says another. Like goats with ducks, dear. Someone else says, painting my tractor pink didn't work. Still won't go, the damn thing.
Yeah, funny. You imagine Eva Vladenbroek from Holland having to, she'd come out and really slam the stuff. I haven't followed her lately, but yeah, great. There's some people like her in the European Union countries and others in the UK, like Gareth Wynne-Jones, just saying how it really is. We don't need busybody academics clipping their own ticket at the taxpayer's expense. And yeah, I know it happens in New Zealand. It's what is eating us alive is this very issue of ticket clippers, people writing their own check, adding no value to much. We just wish that all go away.
We have similar activists here. Look at this post that came on RNZ on the 17th of August that says New Zealand's food system is in disarray. It's citing a Lincoln University professor, Alan Renwick, who says that farmers are not diversifying, but farmers in New Zealand are making their decisions based on income they receive. How dare they? And they need incentives to help them diversify. We tend to focus on efficiency, but farming in New Zealand is monoculture. The pines are not, I guess. Meanwhile, he says the United Nations FAO, Food and Agriculture Organization, has estimated that every New Zealand dollar of output in the food system has 83 cents of hidden environmental costs, greenhouse gases, nitrogen emissions, and so on. So that begs the question, should we just can farming altogether? It's not affordable. Or are you willing to pay 10 times, 20 times the price?
Yeah, well, that's the issue, isn't it? Consumers want low-cost food, as low a cost as they can have. They don't want to pay for the ex because that's all they're talking about. That 85% number you talked about was externalities that are supposedly unvalued in the price of food. If you want to pay a lot more for food, good luck pricing that in. But are you, in effect, this gentleman basically is saying that farmers should do everything for nothing, and we need to incentivize them. Well, once you start giving incentives, you get perverse
Outcomes.
responses, and the consumers, you would pay lots more, even if you tried to do those that incentivization inside the farm gate. So please don't do that.
So I'm glad.
We're looking out for the consumer. We're not looking out for this turkey who's just spreading. He's spreading the sort of information that's been going on for years. It's as if we're not allowed to harvest the environment in any way, shape, or form because it's bad for us. Well, guess what? The whole world only lives because we use the environment. It's the only way we work. The energy from the environment is giving us our reason to breathe.
I
But these
am
people
glad
can't accept it.
Professor Alan Renwick, who was quoted in this food systems issue, is being countered by another Lincoln University professor, Jacqueline Roth, who we've had on Greenwashed. She did an opinion piece on the country segment of the NZ Herald, which goes by the blurb, New Zealand's economy depends on the environment and vice versa. And what if we can, if farmer can't cover costs, what's next for our economy? It's a very good question Jacqueline poses. What is next?
Very good. And I know that I know that I'm like a broken record if people remember what records were. I've been on this kick for 30 plus years, and no one wants to listen. It is the environment. Well, it appears no one wants to listen. The environment gives up everything for us, so it's a matter of using that resource wisely and efficiently. And if you're willing to go without stuff, you have to, without the use of the environment, say, you have to say, what am I prepared to go without? And yet, no one in this Western world is prepared to go without much. So, the hypocrisy of the people that write this stuff drives me nuts. And I know I've been going on about it since the day we started the show, but I'll never stop going on about it till the day I don't breathe.
Do not, Don. I'd be very disappointed if you do. Because if there's one thing we need to keep on talking, it's as Matthias Desmet spoke about 3 years ago, this was in context of the COVID, that if you have to stop the mass formation, there have to be those dissident voices that continue, no matter how much they're shushed, they don't shut up.
Yes, and of course the attempt to censor and shut us down. I didn't realize this, Jaspreet. When I look about it, I realize now why no one picked up those lines that I'd have in speeches, very similar in tone to what I've just said. It's because it wasn't deemed useful for the narrative that clearly the alarmist side of the world wants. And so I never had any media ever report those lines, even if they were in my speeches. That
And
says to me it was too close to the bone, too
today
honest.
I can't even see anything you post on Facebook, Don, unless I specifically go to your page. The level of censorship is that much, and it just never comes through my feed. But speaking of environmentalism, and there's this quote I'm going to pick up. This is from Robert Bedinotto. He's an American novelist, journalist, editor, and he's often critiqued the American justice system. And he's done a guest post, which Thomas Shepstone, one of our guests, recently has shared. And he says the basic premise of preservation of all nature except human nature, is that there is some sort of intrinsic value in nature itself, and thus a right that is not to be affected by man. But this premise, which is the moral core of modern environmentalism, it's a fraud, he says. The simple question that punches this balloon of intrinsic value of nature is that why? Why is nature standalone just by itself good? to declare that a northern spotted owl, a redwood tree, or the course of a river has intrinsic value in itself is gibberish. There's no inherent value or meaning residing in nature or anything else. Value presupposes some purpose. Whereas if there's just a bit of land lying there, you try having a bit of fallow land and try it, putting a value to it, what use it is. Every one of us in our day-to-day life, we exploit nature.
Yeah.
You look at it, you do it right from the time you get up. In fact, even when you're sleeping, nature is keeping you alive. That pesky little oxygen and CO2 out, that whole cycle is keeping you alive. To say that, and we've seen the same narrative in now our water rights, suddenly saying the intrinsic mana of water is above. It is first and foremost in the New Zealand new legislation called Te Mana Oti.
Yep. So look, it's burdensome, this stuff. Or was that the right word? It's just wearing me out. I mean, I used to remember when Prince Charles, now King Charles, used to talk to his flowers and thought, that's okay. He can talk to his flowers and think that they're listening. And maybe there'll be people say, Don, they do listen. I actually respect my environment. I respect the land and the sea and the scenery as much as anybody else, I think. And I've had to use it for my livelihood. And, you know, you'd like to think that you do things wisely, responsibly. But all this extra stuff that's coming in, this feelings, you know, this being kind and this just and the whole lot.
The intrinsic value of nature without being of any service to us, I do not believe in that. That's a fallacy. If it is not sustaining life in whichever way, of course, without trampling it, without completely wrecking it so there's nothing left for the next one who comes along, is not acceptable. But this whole thing about the mana of nature, the intrinsic value in nature, and that we should, I don't know, live within our 15-minute cities, have this lab farmed meat and somehow carry on?
Well, and words like intrinsic written in pages meant nothing to most of us years ago. Now we know what it means. And clearly it's another part of the lexicon. It's another part of the lexicon that these, Marxists actually are using on us. It doesn't matter whether it's in climate or in or water, you name it. It's all there. They have a lexicon, and when you study that lexicon, you see where the genesis of all this was. So anyway, it's wearisome. That's the word I was looking for before. Wearisome, not burdensome. Both. But I don't know. Real people don't want to hear this stuff, do they? Real people are just sick of it. Or is there too many people now donkey deep and getting their lifeblood from it? Yeah, they get a paycheck through writing this stuff.
Environmentalism is the biggest job scheme there ever was.
Yeah, well, like I think the fear, I used to have a line, the fear of, people preach about the fear of tomorrow or the fear of the future. And I think that's the greatest industrial complex we have in New Zealand right now. People that peddle the fear of the future, and they get away with it and they get a paycheck for it. I don't fear the future at all, unless it's meddled with by people that are effectively just trying to, enter your earning stream and your effort without your invitation. I'm sick of them.
Amen.
But anyway, hey, look, I've been grumpy today, haven't I? Man, what have I done?
Really early in the day, early in the week, Don. But here, it gets to you, as you said. Worrisome, burdensome, all of it. What else made the news? Oh, can we go much past Paddy's whole documentary on Antarctica?
Well, I could.
Coming up. I know you could. But let's listen to a bit of a soundbite here.
Antarctica is melting. And that could be catastrophic for all of us.
It's a sleeping giant.
We're just not ready.
We've woken it.
Whole countries are disappearing. So the only memory of Tuvalu could be in the metaverse?
Mate, this is a disaster.
Group Atreides were angry. They ripped Banner out of our hands.
Yeah, but Atreides didn't cause climate change.
If we lose the West Antarctic ice sheet, we're looking at 4 meter sea level rise.
What?
New Zealand could halve its total greenhouse gas emissions overnight.
My whole generation could have known more soon, and we chose not to take the urgent action.
This is bloody stressful.
Patrick Gower on Ice starts Monday, August 12 on 3Now.
Well,
Did you watch that, Jasper?
What do you think, Tom?
Well, I think his name's Paddy Gower, but I think he should be called Paddy Al Gore. He's trying to do more movies like The Inconvenient Truth. I mean,
didn't watch it, to answer your question. I couldn't bear to put up with this. This is the 1 minute snippet that came through. But there's this guy talking about Antarctica, that it is all gloom and doom. And what was one of the scientists there saying? 4 meter high waves.
I think if the whole thing collapsed, I think that's actually got some merit, Jaspreet. But because we've had plenty talk about lots larger effect if all the ice melted from there. But, you know, regardless, it was just hamming it up for effect. And as I said, as we played that, I thought, this has got, with all the music and everything, this is shades of Inconvenient Truth and Al Gore. This is Goreism coming from Gow.
Now, how much of a history lesson has Paddy had? We've been here before. Antarctica has been akin to a verdant tropical paradise in the times gone by.
Yep.
And who was there then, before us, before we came along?
Yep. And the natural variation, Jasperite. Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh. What's that?
No one ever talks about that. Who are we to say that we alone can sort this, or we alone have caused this, because it has happened in the past?
Mm.
We have had in periods of low emissions. I mean, I don't even want to dignify the word, but we've had in periods of low emission, we've had mini ice ages not more than a millennia ago. And there were no automobiles, no fossil fuels that I know of, horse and cart, and in those times. And we've had ice ages then. So it's gotten really cold. It's gotten really hot. The impact of carbon dioxide, that to say that conclusively, that's the only thing. But I can see many schools would be showing this to the children.
Yeah,
there'd be many universities that might be holding special screenings.
Yeah,
this might just be suddenly replacing Gabriel in local government lexicon and insurance documents and so on, that you look at that documentary, suddenly this might just be the science that's quoted by everyone, that's why we need to prepare for sea level rise.
Yeah, and, you know, no matter how you look at it, everyone's in the pay of somebody that comes out with this stuff. And it seems to be, in most cases, unless you are free from the shackles of the payment from a university or a government, you will keep peddling this stuff. But when these guys release themselves from the shackles, all of a sudden, many of them can say what they really wanted to say all along. And it's not as dire as these sorts of episodes that Paddy's putting out suggest. Now, I know there's people that live their life and study this sort of stuff, and good on them. But, you know, when you do come up with information like the guy from Germany that studied the sediment core from 82 degrees south and came up with the understanding that there was that temperate tropical or forest down there, and you're going to play a bit from that, I think.
Yeah, if I can get the right clip this time around, fingers crossed.
I didn't know this till the other day. Very similar to what's happened in Greenland, actually.
Yeah. So let's have a listen to this. This is when they were talking about ancient Antarctic rainforests a couple of years ago. Here goes.
Antarctic has revealed fossilized plant roots preserved deep under the ocean since the time of the dinosaurs. It seems this freezing landscape was once home to a lush forest.
90 million years ago, a temperate rainforest existed in West Antarctica, only 900 kilometers away from the South Pole.
Johan Klages and his team set out on a ship with a special drill to extract a core of material stretching down 30 meters into the sea floor.
When we recovered the core, we could already see what's inside and that it was very unusual. And therefore, we decided to scan them in a CT scanner back home. So what we see here is the overview of the CT scanned core, and the yellow strata we see now is the sandstone. And now we transition into the network of fossil roots. And we can nicely see how the roots are connected with each other and are pristinely preserved. We have thin roots, we have thick roots, and it's really a network as you would go to the forest near you and drill into the current forest.
Studying the core, including analysis of fossilized pollen and spores, is revealing more about the environment of this ancient rainforest.
It revealed a very warm temperature for this latitude and annual mean temperatures that are similar to those of northern Italy.
Northern Italy temperatures. Isn't that stunning? And that's something no one speaks of when we speak about Antarctica, because we don't go into history.
Well, and of course, the geologists have a large view. You know, they do speak of this sort of stuff, but clearly we're only worried about the here and now if you're a politician and you're someone milking it.
And if you're anyone who's listened to the entire Paddy Gower interview, which I must confess I haven't, and I probably can't stomach it, do let us know at what point did he speak about the rainforests in Antarctica.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jaspreet. And of course, we've got stuff from Greenland as well that talks about many millennia ago when things happened on Greenland, and they found in their ice cores there that they actually didn't really analyze until more recently, but ice cores from the 60s even showed sort of remnants of more temperate climate, like insects and foliage. So yeah, and I read an article just recently from Dr. Matthew Wailiki, who I actually subscribe to on Substack. I think he's fabulous, and he talked about how a study by Marcotte et al. Acknowledged that significant limitation in their climate reconstruction methodology. They alerted us to this. We showed that no temperature variability is preserved in our reconstruction at cycles less than 300 years. 50% is preserved at 1,000-year timescales, and nearly all is preserved at 2,000-year timescales. So here we are trying to do stuff in, you know, almost one-year time cycles, and of course we get massive effects because these guys have said, in the signal of the world's history, you know, the 4.6 billion years, as far back as they can go and analyze these cores and sediments and all what they do, you can't effectively do anything in less than 300-year bites. So here we are in the here and now, really working ourselves over about the effect man is having on the planet. And as you have alluded to, the natural variation has happened many times before. It happens all the time. And that's what I used to say. And it used to get up the nose of the alarmists. I'd say climate variation is alive and well. And I don't resolve from that today. It is alive and well. It's dynamic. Is man having an effect on the climate? Well, at best, it's minor. At best, it's so minor it can hardly be measured.
But we often confuse climate change with pollution as well, especially in Asian contexts, Don.
Yes. Yeah.
That's another thing.
It is. That was a good finding on your behalf, getting that Antarctic ice core stuff. I know it was 82 degrees south, so that's not quite at the South Pole, but it was in the sediment on the end of the ocean.
Yeah, the rainforest of Antarctica. Mm. Right, what's next? RNZ carried this article on, again, the 17th, prototype vaccine reduces methane in cows. For decades, it says scientists have been working for decades to work on a methane-reducing vaccine. And a prototype developed by the US-based startup Archaea Bio, part of Bill Gates' empire, I would say.
Breakthrough Energy
Ventures under that venture firm. It is in partnership with AgriZero NZ, which is a group of five or six New Zealand co-ops, Fonterra, banks, and others that have spent $500 million here. And they've spent $10 million partnering with this Bill Gates venture, Archaea Bio, it is showing promise. And how promising is that promise? It's a trial of 10 cows. 10 cows. Shades of COVID, 6 mice. Sorry, I digress. 10 cows that saw emissions drop by up to 15%. Well, that's at one point in time. I mean, even beyond, before you go into the methane science and does the fact that it even has an impact, seeing that, swamps and natural forests can be releasing far more methane than our ruminant herd does. How long is this reduction going to be carried through? Will it work through a cow's life cycle, different stages of lactation on different feeds in different environments, pasture-raised, barn-fed? Who knows? But hey, let's spend New Zealand money there.
Well, wasn't it? What is intriguing to me about that story? It's only a few months ago that you alerted us all to the notion that Colin Smith was ex-New Zealand. Colin South, sorry, ex-New Zealand, the CEO of Archaea Bio. So he effectively jumped borders, went to America, got into bed with Archaea Bio, and is now effectively partnering with the work that had started in New Zealand. It sort of feels a little selfish.
Compromised.
Little selfish. But then he goes on and, oh, this is the Radio New Zealand story. I can't help write it. They talk about it. Atmospheric methane degrades into CO2 in 12 years. It's something like 84 times the warming impact of carbon dioxide in 20 years, that is. In over 100 years, they're saying it's in 21. We know that global warming potential is nonsense. It's a nonsense concept that has been hammed up in this country for effect. And we know that the modeling that was done on this stuff was done in a laboratory with each gas in isolation rather than in a mixed real atmosphere. So they get this effect that says it's a really potent gas. Actually, it's close to zero. So in terms of its warming impact because of the real and mixed atmosphere it actually operates in when it's emitted from a cow or from a termite or from a undersea vent. So look, this story, while it's intriguing probably to a lot of people, it looks a little business as usual, bit of self-interest or a lot of self-interest going on here.
Mm-hmm. We have another one, and the NZ Herald, the British delegation that visited Taranaki for offshore wind partnership possibilities.
Mm.
You know, shut down one business that was working perfectly fine, stop oil and gas exploration, everything is polluting the environment, but offshore wind is going to be a savior. And experts from UK, no less. Now, I remember last time experts came in, was it from Scotland, when they told us about Three Waters, how well it is doing there, the Scottish model. Yeah, it was from Scotland. So here's another group that visited Taranaki this last week. Amazing how no one talks about what this nirvana is going to cost. They do at one point put in a figure, Don, was it? It was in the billions.
Yeah, and I saw somewhere 50 billion. And of course, that just doesn't make sense. If we were going to spend 50 billion, it is in one of the news articles. And I don't think it's this one, Jaspreet.
Yeah.
But they were talking about 50 billion. Now, if we're going to spend 50 billion, oh, please just go nuclear tomorrow. Please. So 50 billion is wrong. It had to be 50 million, I think, in this tranche. Because this was one of the companies making a special push as well, aside from this UK story, is an outfit called the Copenhagen Investment. It's not fund,
partners.
It's got partners.
Yeah.
And they've got about 60 billion invested around the world. They want to come to offshore South Taranaki. And I gather they've been meeting with the South Taranaki Council. So yeah, it's on the agenda, offshore wind. And I can't understand, Jaspreet, how that makes any sense. Apparently, it's a cleaner wind, if you get that, the dynamic of it. But just the cost of getting that generation to shore and then put into the grid just doesn't add up to me.
And to say that it doesn't have an environmental cost, if you've seen the windmills, seen those massive giants there, to say they don't have an impact, sorry, I don't buy that. I do know that they're saying marine mammal detection devices are being deployed in South Taranaki Bight to capture information about the potential impacts of wind turbines on whales and dolphins. And I hope the same people who got really upset about SailGP that might be threatening some dolphins get equally worked up here and make sure nothing is harmed.
Yeah, and of course, we've tried to get a guy on the show who wrote about the sonar testing off Nantucket and how many whales may have been terminated or dolphins. And so, look, it's good if we're doing the same sort of thing, monitoring that sort of issue, because, you know, we have to worry about our effect on land. Why shouldn't people have to worry about the effect of their work at sea? So at least that's in play.
Yep. Now, we are running a bit short of time.
Yeah,
I was going to otherwise speak about a couple more issues, but Don, perhaps it might be time to, because, you know, listeners, this is endless. The machine gives us so much every week on the climate crazies that it is very hard to sift through all of this. But one thing is for sure, there's a whole lot of people who are pushing this fear porn at us every single week.
And I know a few months ago I was going to have the grifter of the week, you know, and I've never continued it because it's so hard to decide which one it is. Everyone's on the grift here and it really drives us nuts. So climate crazy is where it's at. So look, let's sign off of that for the week, but we'll go into the next break knowing that up ahead we've got Larry Blair back. He's an energy consultant from Taranaki and he's always good for a chat about, you know, what is real around the narratives that come out about energy and energy needs in New Zealand and the gas shortage. So Larry Blair up after the break.
2057 is a number or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.